Welcome once again to Leto's Law. Here's Steve Leto.
I remember when I started doing this channel 9 years ago, I'd do a story and then people would go, whatever happened to that story? Well, it takes a while in real life for stories to unfold. So occasionally I have a story about something happening and then I'll have a story about it resolving somewhere down the road. And this is often a problem, especially with legal issues, because as you can imagine, I mentioned the other day that the ADA made it to the U.S. Supreme Court on a very technical little issue. And the ADA was, of course, passed in 1990. And I could do the math, but that's a while ago. So this story didn't take as long, but I got several notes yesterday from people saying, Steve, we finally have a conclusion to the story. And actually, it's not a complete conclusion, but I'll explain that in a second. Two fishermen caught cheating at an Ohio tournament plead guilty. They have pleaded guilty to cheating at an Ohio tournament. These are fishermen. And you know, you hear about people cheating, like, oh, I don't know, say in NASCAR, where cheating is part of the culture. Or you hear allegations about cheating in baseball, where it's not quite part of the culture. But cheating in fishing tournaments is a scary one, because depending on how they're run, a lot of it is based on the goodwill of the people in the tournament obeying the rules. Because what happens is sometimes they'll say, go out in this lake, catch some fish, come back, show us what you caught. And so you're kind of out there, you know, amongst yourselves. And depending on the type of tournament, there might actually be judges checking stuff out. I know that happens in ice fishing tournaments, but we're talking about guys on boats here. Out of Cleveland, the story's from the Associated Press, two men accused of stuffing fish with lead weights and fish fillets in an attempt to win thousands of dollars in an Ohio fishing tournament. That was last fall. Pleaded guilty Monday to charges including cheating. Now, here's the thing. I heard several people talking about different ways you can cheat in these contests, and they weigh the fish, and it's based on weight. So if you were to stuff something inside the fish that made it heavier, that would help you, but it would, of course, be cheating. Lead weights, of course, would add a lot of weight, but they don't appear to be quite natural. Now, I suppose you could claim that you were using the weights while fishing, and the fish swallowed the weights, but I don't think people would buy that. And also, stuffing them with fish fillets, I guess, means that if you x-rayed them, it still looked like fish. I assume they don't mean a fish fillet from a sandwich at McDonald's. But the cheating allegation surfaced in September when the Lake Erie Walleye Trail Tournament director became suspicious when the fish turned in by these two men from Broadview Heights, Ohio, and Hermitage, Pennsylvania, were significantly heavier than typical walleye. It's one of those things, you pick something up, whoa, that's heavier than it looks like it ought to be. And someone who's an experienced angler, as they call themselves, would possibly spot that, depending on how far of a degree off it was, especially if it's a lead weight. Because you stick a lead weight in there, that might concentrate the weight too densely in one spot. A crowd of people at Gordon Park in Cleveland watched as the director of the tournament cut the walleye open and found weights and walleye fillets stuffed inside. Now, as part of the plea deal, the two pleaded guilty to cheating and unlawful ownership of wild animals and agreed to 3 years suspensions of their fishing licenses. One of them also agreed to give up his bass boat worth $100,000. Now, I'm not sure how that came about, because I know that some tournaments have got prizes. And the question is, was that boat a prize that he's got to surrender? Or was the boat bought with prize money? I don't know. Prosecutors agreed to drop attempted grand theft and possessing criminal tools charges. The grand theft, of course, would be the argument that by doing this, you're attempting, in essence, to steal the prize money. And possessing criminal tools. I've mentioned this before. There are a lot of things out there which, in their natural element, sitting on your desk, are not criminal in nature. A pair of pliers, a screwdriver, a hammer. However, if law enforcement encounters you, for instance, trying to break into a building and you're using a screwdriver and a hammer and then pliers, those can be considered criminal implements in that setting, and it elevates the crime with which they can charge you, or it adds on a crime they can charge you with. And again, it can be tools. Another example is a police scanner. If you've got a police scanner you listen to for fun, because that can be fun, that's one thing. But if you put it in your car and you use it as the lookout for your buddy who's committing a crime, well, then that police scanner could become, in some states, a criminal tool. So to have the tools with them necessary to insert the fish fillet inside the fish, which, by the way, is a form of inception. It's fish all the way down. So both men are scheduled to be sentenced in May. So the sentencing hasn't happened yet. But it sounds like a lot of this was worked out in such a way that, yes, we'll plead guilty to this if the net result is this. And you might say, then why not just do that right now? Quite often the court will say, we want you to go through a screening process with our probation department to determine whether or not these punishments are fitting and whether it's appropriate. And so they'll have a department that will look over everything and also interview these guys and check their backgrounds out to determine if it's appropriate. And if it is, then they will recommend that to the judge and they'll say, Your Honor, prosecution and the defendants have agreed to these terms and they've said they'll enter a guilty plea if they get these sentences. And we've looked at it and it appears to be appropriate. The judge still has discretion to say, I don't think that's appropriate and do something else with it. But quite often these will get rubber stamped as long as the probation department looks at it and says, yeah, it looks okay. Both men are scheduled to be sentenced in May. Prosecutors plan to recommend a sentence of 6 months probation and later ask for an expungement of the convictions if they successfully complete their probation, says the man who's an assistant county prosecutor. The plea is the first step for one of them toward moving on with his life and taking full responsibility, said his attorney. A message seeking comment from the other's attorney, however, didn't turn up much. According to search warrant affidavits, 5 walleye contained lead weights and fillets. Officers from the Ohio Department of Natural Resources confiscated the fish as evidence. They would have received a little over $28,000 in prizes had that victory stood up, had they actually won the tournament, not been caught. Court records also said the two were investigated near Toledo in the spring of 2022 after being accused of cheating in a different walleye tournament. According to a police report, a prosecutor concluded that although the men may have cheated, there was not enough evidence to charge them. And that's the thing. If they didn't cut the fish open and see the lead weights right then and there, they're going to have problems with this. And so if they showed up with their walleye and they weighed them, they weighed twice as much as the second place walleye, which looked the same size, that would be compelling evidence. And theoretically, you could have experts come in and go, there's no way that those walleye weighed as much as those walleye. But is that enough to get a conviction beyond a reasonable doubt? And that's always the problem. But when they actually sliced them open and saw that they contained lead weights and parts of other fish, because think about this. If you submit a walleye with a slice of another walleye inside of it, you're actually turning in like 1.05 walleye. And usually we think of fish as integers. Caught one fish, caught three fish. I caught 3.4. How'd you do that? It's higher math fishing. Trust me. I can do it, but you can't. But it's sad. It's really sad because, number one, a lot of money was involved here. So this actually is not just a game. But, you know, I've mentioned before, I occasionally run races, marathons, half marathons. I got a bunch of ribbons over there. I've run 17 or 18 marathons in my life. And when I started running marathons, back in the old days, 1988, I ran my first marathon. There was basically a starting line and a finish line. And they were about 26.2 miles apart. But there were places on the course, if you wanted to, you could cut over and slice a few blocks off the run. And if you got really, really bold, you could probably slice a few miles off because there's one chunk of the race that goes out, comes back. And as you're going this way, you see people running this way. And your brain is telling you, hey, that right there, that'll take 5 miles off the course. You don't do it. But there have been cases of people who have. And of course, Rosie Ruiz became the poster child for that, despite the fact she's an adult, because she did actually get credited for finishing the New York City Marathon despite having taken part of the subway to get there. And then she won the Boston Marathon shortly thereafter by staying at a hotel near the finish line and basically running in the last section, you know, the last section of the race. And there's a whole story behind those. So I think I've got, yeah, right here. This right here is a tag. They'll call this a bib from the Free Press Half Marathon I ran a couple years ago. And on the back of it, it's got this tag right there. And that tag right there, you will hear causing machines to beep as you run the course. So when you cross the starting line, there are these rubber mats that have got sensors underneath them. And as people go over, you hear this beep, 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 because at the start, there's so many people crossing over. And so that would record when I crossed the starting line, okay? Not gun time, but crossing the starting line time. And then on the course, and they'll set them at random places a few miles apart, and they'll often put them near a place that would be difficult to cut out of the course. So in other words, the race goes out and back. They'll put one right at that turn. So you got to go out there and cross that to show up. Now, unfortunately, there's still some people who will finish the race. They didn't cross two mats, and they'll go, it must not have picked me up. It just missed me. But there have been other situations where there was a dentist from Michigan. And if you want to, look up Marathon Dentist from Michigan. And you'll get the story about a guy who was going out and clocking all kinds of amazing times in races with all kinds of problems. And in fact, it's even given rise to a cottage industry of people who investigate races. And there are guys out there who will look at someone's time and go, it doesn't look right. And then they'll go back through the race photos and find photos of where the person crossed the line at certain places. And this guy was cheating. And the way he was cheating, I think I figured it out, but I know people who disagree with me on this one. But I think he would go out to the course before the race started and find out where all the mats were. And then stash a bicycle someplace or have someone give him a ride. But he was doing it in different states. And I think he could just buy a cheapo Walmart mountain bike for, you know, $75 and lock it up near the starting line. Cross the starting line, walk off the course, jump on his bike, cover up his bib. And quite often, that was one of the funnier things, is they'd find photographs of this guy on the course and his bib was covered. And you do not cover it when you're on the race unless you're up to something. But the sad part is, again, this is, even though there's money involved, we all know that the vast majority of guys who enter a tournament and gals like this are doing it for the fun. It's fun. Would it be nice to win a $28,000 prize? Of course it would be. Do all people who enter win that prize? No. So why are they doing it? And it's the same reason I've had people go, Steve, why are you running the race? You're not going to win. Oh, there's a handful of people who could win the race I'm running. I ain't one of them. I'm running it because it's fun. Does it hurt me when somebody cheats? I don't know that it hurts me directly because I'm not in the contention for any money. But I can tell you that some of the people they caught cheating had actually won prize money, which means they took the money from the rightful winner. That's a problem. So that's one of the problems here. But it's just sad when you have a hobby slash sport like this that's a lot of fun for a lot of people. And there are guys out there who should have won these tournaments who didn't because somebody's stuffing their fish, which sounds like a bad euphemism that it's not. I literally meant they're stuffing their fish. So this could be the end of it other than the sentencing. If anything pops up that's newsworthy, I might do a follow-up, but this might be the last we hear of the two fishermen caught cheating at the Ohio tournament plead guilty and will be sentenced in May. Thanks, everyone who sent it. Questions or comments, put them below. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you for watching Leto's Law. If you want happiness for an hour, take a nap. If you want happiness for a day, go fishing. If you want happiness for a lifetime, help someone else.